Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and a happy holiday, if you will, be it Kwanzaa or whatever other celebrations that you partake in, as we are upon the event of Christmas, if you will. The end of 2016, a year that in many regards will live in infamy, if you will, probably closely followed by 2017, as Donald Trump, president-elect, takes office at 12:01 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the 20th day of January in the year of our Lord, 2017, if you will. Oh, it's going to be interesting when you take a look at the extreme right that is now in position to govern in the capital of the United States of America, which we have designated. We first introduced it on our television program here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis-St. Paul, that the White House will become the new West Kremlin, if you will, joining the East Kremlin, which began its existence in the late 1920s under a man by the name of Joseph Stalin, if you will. And so the celebration will begin with festivities and et cetera by the late afternoon and early evening and late evening and early morning of the 20th and the 21st, if you will. The Kremlin West, think about it, my friends, and be very, very serious. The right wing is in control. The president-elect, by the way, has announced that he will be retaining private military-style security contractors and et cetera. I imagine that this will be a modern-day version of the SS. By the way, that's how Adolf Hitler, actually. I mean, I hate to do the comparison, but in that, you know, people seem to be kind of in love with the all-right, ultra-right, pure white, and Mr. Brennan, if you will, in the West and East wing of the White House, I'm quite sure that everyone should feel comfortable with the appearance of private security guards. Later will be identified, as we said just seconds ago, as America's new version of the SS, if you will, state security. Take it serious, my friends. Enjoy what may be the last peaceful Christmas in America for the next 4 years or thereabouts. Mid-election, the mids are going to be very interesting. I don't think that there's any guarantee whatsoever that it will be an honest election. And it's fascinating. Senate Leader McConnell of Kentucky, those southern states just all kind of roll together, has indicated that the current Senate committees on foreign affairs, intelligence, and things like that are sufficient and should suffice in examining if there was any relationship between Vladimir Putin, the Kremlin of the East, and Donald Trump and Republicans and the Kremlin of the West. By the way, statistical data, a poll about 6 days ago, everybody started getting quiet, a poll that shows that and the Republicans and the incoming president-elect have not been able to refute it, if you will, and that is that 37% of Republican voters in the 2016 election are strong sympathizers to the Soviet Union. I repeat that number again, 37%. The poll that was acceptable until the results were made known to conservatives and Republicans in this country. That's a disturbing number of individuals who are sympathetic, supportive of Vladimir Putin, the strongman, the imperial leader. Of course, he took a slight hit the other day with the assassination of the Russian ambassador in Ankara, the capital of Turkey. But he and President Erdogan, the strongman of Turkey, who has rounded up something like 25,000 people since the coup d'etat was attempted in the summer of 2016 indicate that they are still, you know, kissing cousins and bosom buddies and all of that kind of thing. And they will not allow, quote unquote, these terrorists to come between the relationship of Mother Russia and a new version of Ataturk's. For those of you that don't know who Ataturk was, you know, go to your computers. He was kind of the founding father of the new Turkey, if you will, coming off of the collapse of the Ottoman Empire after the First World War and et cetera. But that's all, you know, part of history. I'm quite sure that all the knowledgeable right-wingers are up to speed as it pertains to that. But anyways, Putin will have control of the American scene, if you will, with the quote-unquote emergence from the West. Boy, that's going to be interesting, man. It'll be interesting to see just how many business deals are cut. The incoming Secretary of State Tillerson, if he is able to be confirmed, he will be. There's enough money to slash around and pass around that he'll confirmation is Bill. He'll be spending most of his time cutting deals for his current employer, if you will, Exxon, cutting all kinds of deals, making, oh man, hundreds of millions of dollars for the new right, the ultra-right, the white, all white, if you will. America's new version of the new socialist, quote-unquote, empire. Neo-socialism, if you will. Neo-Nazism, if you will. I know that people don't like for us to talk like that, but it's a reality. And by the way, it is interesting how the conservative right, the new all-right, if you will, have come together to indicate there needs to be no examination of any interference by the Soviet Union, or as it is known now, the Russian Federated Republic, in the election of the United States of America. It is too bad that the Democratic Party wasn't on top of their game and did not pay any attention to the intel that was provided to them in the early summer of this year, when the American intelligence community indicated that there was penetration going on with regards to the American election, the process, and et cetera. What has basically happened now is that the discussion, the direction of the discussion, the review of methodology, approaches, and et cetera, to cyber tampering is being controlled so well that basically the American public, which is not necessarily the most educated or best educated population in the free world, are not asking the right questions. By the way, President-elect Obama from his beautiful, beautiful state. Have you seen that palatial palace that he's in down there in Florida? That is, I guess, called the Southern White House. Got to be careful now about using the term White House, because we are the new Kremlin in the West, if you will. I mean, that is the new title, if you will. And when those new terrorist sources start goose-stepping around the grounds of the White House, it will be interesting to see and to measure and to analyze how the Secret Service and other American law enforcement entities are going to feel, if you will. In fact, I'm not so sure that Vladimir Putin will probably offer President-elect Donald Trump the opportunity to be trained to have his military, paramilitary, be trained. In fact, my friends and associates out there in Idaho that we've talked about for a number of years, we warned our listening audience quite some time ago that those boys were up there in them mountains around Spirit Lake and Spirit River just outside of Sandpoint, Idaho. They were doing their thing, if you will. I think, unfortunately, we Americans, if you will, who are not communist sympathizers, are going to be in for a real rude awakening. By the way, for the African-American community, before we move into do some additional pieces of tonight's program, the quarantine zones are being discussed. It appears that the incoming National Security Advisor, General Rupenfuhr, Flynn, will be given the principal responsibilities and duties to begin to put the quarantine plan in place, if you will. And already some segments of the judiciary are being briefed with regards to new sanctions that will be identified as new judiciary foundations that will be put in place as it pertains to dealing with the problem of immigration, immigrants, and et cetera. The president-elect announced this afternoon that he has not discarded the fact of a registry for Muslims, if you will, as well as deportation for Muslims and et cetera, as well as, of course, his plan is still in place for the deportation of Latino Hispanic Americans, if you will, from the sacred shores of the United States of America. So this is an interesting time. As I said, this may be the last Christmas over the next 4, 5, 6, or 8, you know, because we have clearly embraced as a nation, or we have allowed it to be embraced. Just think about this, my friends. A candidate runs in an election in what is supposed to be the greatest democracy on the face of the earth, though we have said in our newspaper columns and television programs and et cetera, that the Electoral College was a quote-unquote process, if you will, an albatross around the neck of democracy. I repeat that again, an albatross around the neck of democracy, that it was a disaster waiting to happen. It did happen. Poor Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by a little over 2.8 million. Think about that, my friends. Over 2.8 million. By the way, Donald Trump made the statement the other day that Barack Obama lost the election in 2012 and lost the popular vote. And that's the only reason that he got 100 more electoral votes as Mitt Romney and et cetera. That Donald, I tell you, he's a piece of work. He could just express any kind of lie, mistruth, half-truth, no-truth, and et cetera. And it is accepted, just like, you know, his whole reflection and statements about women, if you will, was basically, particularly by that group of Republicans, that 37% communist sympathizers, who had no problem just kind of forgiving him, if you will. But clearly, the president-elect is feeling extremely comfortable, and that registry will be in place for those of you of Islam, if you will, better begin to prepare for a serious and swift exit and exodus in the biblical terms from the United States of America. In fact, Vladimir Putin is going to insist that this not only be called the Kremlin in the West, but this be called the United States of Socialist Republic, if you will. I mean, really, you know, you may think we're playing with you. I'm telling you, my friends up there at Spirit Mountain and Spirit Lake outside of Sandpoint, Idaho, what they were talking about and the information that we were receiving through our intelligence surrogates was absolutely on point over the last 4 to 5 years. For those that have been with us on these programs, those that have watched my television, radio programs, and et cetera, we tried to tell you that Philip Bob was putting his act together. And so keep that in mind. Well, moving into the local scene, first of all, let me indicate tonight, if you will, that an announcement is going to be made tomorrow that a former candidate for mayor, an African-American man identified as a longtime advocate, if you will, and fighter for the African-American community, Mr. Alfred Flowers, will be announcing around noon tomorrow, as we understand it from reliable sources. He will be announcing that he will be a candidate for mayor of the city of Minneapolis, and now joining the first two candidates, Nakibe Leve Pounds, and of course incumbent Mayor Betsy Hodges. Alfred Flowers will be announcing his candidacy, if you will. And I think that's a healthy situation. I think it's great to get as many black candidates as we can into the equation. Some people have been to the Flowers camp that maybe he should stand back up. Don't need him to run. I don't know why. The man was a candidate 4 years ago. He ran a very spirited campaign, if you will. He brought out issues pertaining to the future of the African American, the sons and daughters of the African here in the Twin Cities, if you will. He certainly speaks up for us when no one else is speaking up for us, if you will. And so it'll be interesting to watch over the coming months as Mr. Flowers embarks upon his challenge to the mayorship of the city of Minneapolis, which will be taking place in approximately 10 and a quarter months, if you will, November of 2017. It'll be interesting to see how the Star Tribune and other Democratic organs and et cetera will deal with Mr. Flowers, if they will give him the same kind of opportunity of access and et cetera to the general voting public. And by the way, we have an interesting process here in the city of Minneapolis voting-wise, which is an absolute recipe for disaster, in that we do the kind of, you know, the first one, two, and three candidates, and you put all the votes together. In fact, that's how Mr. Flowers 4 years ago actually scared them to death with regards to the second and third place votes that he was receiving. People don't want to talk about that now, I assume. But again, we have been informed by reliable sources within the left wing of the Democratic Party that Alfred Flowers will announce his candidacy, and he will begin to exploring, if you will, of his chances and et cetera. And it'll be most interesting to see him bring some of the issues to the forefront that normally aren't talked about the Democratic Party, who has long felt, and I think wrongly so, that the African-American vote is absolutely guaranteed, and that African-Americans / Negroes are just happy to have a white Democratic candidate or a black Democratic candidate who has been properly anointed by the mothers and fathers of the Democratic Party. After what happened in election 2016 on November the 8th, I don't know that if I were the Democrats in this city, I'd be that cocky. By the way, they did not see the Republican juggernaut coming that has now taken control here in Minnesota of both the House and the Senate, if you will. Only a constitutional office that they control that is of a significant presence is, of course, the governor. Governor Mark Dayton, of course, has announced that given problems with health and et cetera, that he will not run again in 2017. Chris Coleman, the now outgoing mayor of the city of St. Paul, has indicated that he certainly will probably be a candidate for governor. He is also exploring, if you will, for the nomination for the Democratic Party's nomination as the Democratic challenger, if you will. So it should be very spirited in the state of Minnesota in 2017. It'll definitely be spirited here in the city of Minneapolis. We also hear rumors that there are a couple of city council members who are talking in terms of possibly running for mayor, as well as some council members, such as Democratic Councilwoman Glitten of the 8th Ward, who has announced that she will, quote-unquote, be stepping down at the end of 2017. That's kind of interesting, kind of makes you wonder what the real play is. But again, we repeat this again, that an announcement, apparently according to reliable sources available to the Ron and Don program, that Alfred Flowers will announce his candidacy to run and to hopefully be nominated at the caucuses and et cetera in 2017. It's going to be real interesting, if you will. Well, as we move into the remaining 37 minutes of tonight's program, we have been receiving calls from around the country. Colleagues, associates, and et cetera have been asking us what the heck has happened to the University of Minnesota's football program, if you will. And the Minneapolis Star Tribune, in a story last Thursday, a reporter who clearly does not know his history, indicated that what is confronting the university is one of the most serious problems ever in the history of the university with respect to conflict and disorder and chaos and et cetera. That's just not true. In fact, we are here tonight to kind of remind folks of the history of what has been happening up here to the African-American athlete, student athlete, and et cetera. And actually, African-Americans have been poorly treated at the University of Minnesota going all the way back to 1903, and the first African-American, the legendary, if you will, one of the greatest athletes to come out of Minnesota, Bobby Marshall, if you will, of St. Paul. And going into the 1920s and 30s, and in fact, during the 20s and 30s, Negroes were not encouraged to come to the University of Minnesota to play anything, including, you know, obtaining an education. It wasn't until a group of three athletes, black athletes, Negro athletes, as we were referred to in those days, by a giant of a man, one of the greatest punters and place kickers in the history of collegiate football, by the name of Horace Bell, if you will. I know there are a lot of you out there in here in our beloved Shangri-La who don't have a clue of who I'm talking about. But if you go to your websites, if you will, and call up your sports information and take a look and go back to 1937, 38, and 39, you will see Horace Bell, a couple of other Negroes, if you will. That was the term that can always use for us in, you know, in substitution of the word, you know, N-I-G. Ellsworth Harpo Jr., if you will, Burt Lewis, one of the greatest running backs ever to come out of Minnesota in those particular days, only outmeasured by the legendary and God bless him, the legendary Bob Blakely, who just passed from this life a couple of weeks ago. Again, kudos to Floyd Smallard, the legendary coach of St. Paul Central, and one of the also greatest athletes ever come out of St. Paul Mechanic Arts, if you will. Floyd should be commended for doing a beautiful job to help to remember Bob Blakely, one of the greatest to ever come out, played at the University of Minnesota, 1956, was encouraged by the late Raymond Presley, the first African-American basketball player, 1949 at the University of Minnesota under Ozzie Cowles, who didn't like blacks, but Raymond Presley had served his country, coming out of the Second World War. and folks did not want to have to deal with the pang of an American patriot. You know, folks, by the way, are patriotic, if you will, contrary to what is said about us. In fact, one of the first patriots to fall in defense of what was to become the new American Republic was Crispus Attucks. But we don't even have access to that kind of history anymore. White folks don't even teach it in the schools, and we have been so shredded and distanced, if you will, that so many of our young people don't have a clue of who some of the great black heroes of history. And before this republic was a republic, before it was a nation, Crispus Attucks, one of the first patriots to die on the Boston Commons, the British Redcoats opened fire on quote-unquote patriots who were demanding that the 13 colonies succeed and remove themselves. Succession was the order of the day. All of this is relevant now, going back to 1939, Horace Bell, Ellsworth Harpo Jr., and others, because it was another almost 20 years, it was 20 years, before that there was encouragement for Negroes to be able to fit in. Then after Bob Blakely, who later went on to play ball in the Canadian Football League and except for just a heck of a runner, heck of an athlete. Bob Blakely, I can remember in, 1953, won the Minnesota State High School both discus and shot put, set records in both things. And Bob Blakely was about 5'11", if you will, a solid 190 pounds. And, man, he could throw the discus. He could throw the shot put, if you will. He could run. The only person that could really beat him was Floyd Smaller, who was one of the greatest hurdlers also. See, when people hear a black person talking about and referring to other black people as great and legends and et cetera, it's really hard for a lot of Caucasians to accept that because they have been taught, and because of the absence of significant history, if you will, that there's no such thing as a great African American, that best we are savages, if you will. We are, quote unquote, the children of apes and gorillas, if you will, that any instinct that we have is animalistic, if you will. I still think about the late Howard Cosell talking about, look at that milk pot and that football game between the Washington Skins and the Buffalo Bills caused Howard Cosell some problems. In fact, I used to love how Muhammad Ali, the great, the legendary Muhammad Ali, the greatest heavyweight that really ever lived, along with the legendary Joe Louis and some other boxers of lesser weights, if you will, the beloved Sugar Ray Robinson. I'm not talking about Sugar Ray Leonard. I'm talking about Sugar Ray Robinson, one of the greatest pound for pound, though Sugar Ray Leonard was also one of the best. See, what happens because we are not given the respect as a race of people, and that we are thought of as nothing more than property, if you will, cattle, if you will, and et cetera. As I just said minutes ago, for effect and for purpose, is that we have difficulty being accorded the necessary respect as our role in this society. By the way, on that particular note, talking about football, Grantland Rice, great white man, if you will, which makes it automatically affect because the white folks said. Grantland Rice was a sports writer. He was the man for 20 years, 30 years back in the early 1900s and into the early 1920s. He would select the All-American team. If he declared that you were an All-American, you were an All-American. There weren't all of these AP and UP polls and all of this. Grantland Rice was the man. Well, Grantland Rice, just before the First World War, declared a great man, a large man, fast, quick, etc., a man who was also very much involved in the actions of discovering, and we've just gotten a text that indicates that apparently our timeline has been cut into. We'll have to see about that. We're a little surprised at that. But because we had a discussion that we wanted to have tonight about the University of Minnesota and what happened to the athletes, so what we are going to do is that when the 60 minutes or 60 seconds are up, we're puzzled by this. Could be some NSA interference, if you will. We will attempt to reconnect and begin the last 30 minutes of this broadcast as soon as possible, because we definitely want to talk about what has happened to the African-American athletes on the University of Minnesota football team. We would encourage you to, here in the Twin Cities, to view our program airing Sunday on MTN at 5 o'clock in regards to the disenfranchisement of these young African Americans. We're going to see if there is some technical problem that has just been created with regards to the fact that we're down to 10 seconds, I'm really clearly not understanding this. But, you know, sometimes when you get into very strong material, it looks like censorship comes into play. Now, we should be down to the last 5 seconds. What I'm going to do is see what happens. In fact, I have an associate. They need to just give me a call on our phone line to let me know if, in fact, the program has been discontinued, because the automated voice should be saying to me that we're down to 5 seconds, or we should be down to the final 30 minutes of the program. Let me call out to our friend and associate that feel free to give me a call on the secure number, because I have not heard her come on and say that we are off the air, because 5 seconds have gone by. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to continue to move into the last 30 minutes of tonight's program, because this was contracted as a one-hour program, if you will. And so we will just make it appear that it was a problem. Our listening sources across the Midwest and on the West Coast and East Coast and et cetera will certainly contact us and let us know. But now let us move into, for the purposes of on demand, let us move into the current crises involving the University of Minnesota football team and 10 African Americans who the county attorney has just indicated yesterday afternoon that he intends to reopen an investigation which had been closed because there was a lack of evidence, but we know how that works in America. On September 2nd of this year, after Minnesota's first game of the season, there was an incident in which initially was reported as being a sexual assault involving initially 3 young African-American players for the University of Minnesota football team, and at least 1 Caucasian young lady, maybe even 2 or 3, depending on what reports you looked at. It was initially announced there was an investigation. The Minneapolis Police Department investigated, took its findings to the county attorney, Mike Freeman. The county attorney's office looked at the investigation report, et cetera, and declined to charge, if you will. Then the young lady, with the assistance of the Affirmative Action Department of the University of Minnesota, went into court and did initially receive a trespassing order against the young man, that because she allegedly is affiliated with something that has to do with work within the stadium, TCF Stadium, a stadium which, by the way, was built a couple years ago without a single contract being awarded to any African-Americans for construction. But anyways, there was a hearing, if you will, and the African-Americans, initially there were just like 5 or 6. It later has grown to 10. They were initially told that they were being trespassed from the stadium, which meant that they couldn't play and participate in the in the next number of games. And in fact, for 4 games, they were not allowed on the field until their attorney, who is an African-American, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Hutton. Thank God for him. Also, by the way, let me take this opportunity to say thank God for Tyrone Carter, a man who in 1999 was identified and voted the Defensive Player of the Year in collegiate football, one of the most respected alumni at the University of Minnesota, later played professional football, was the winner and recipient of 2 Super Bowl rings, if you will, Tyrone Carter, spoke up, joining Anton Winfield Sr., a former defensive back for the Minnesota Vikings, if you will, who came to the defense of his son, Anton Winfield Jr., who has been unfairly, grossly, if you will, disrespected and defamed and et cetera by white media and by the Affirmative Action Department, and then later of the University of Minnesota's office, quote-unquote, of president, the athletic director, who just in fact came here about 8 months ago from my alma mater, the University of Syracuse, if you will. Only Coach Tracy Clays stood his ground. That was very interesting. In defense of his players, of course, he really didn't have any choice, because if he had not stood in defense of his players, he certainly would not have a team. Now, meanwhile, the University of Minnesota needed the commitment to be carried out for the Holiday Bowl game on the 27th of December in San Diego, in which, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's about $2 to $2.5 million per team. Washington State, coming in also at an 8-4 record, as was the Gophers, were to be the opponent, if you will. Last week, the University of Minnesota's football team, as a unified force, 120 players, if you will, voted to boycott the University of Minnesota's participation in the Holiday Bowl, refused to meet with the president and the athletic director because they had lied to members of the team. Their spokespersons were the captain of the team, if you will, two Caucasians, by the way. I take that back, two Caucasians and an African-American. What happened, though, on Saturday, a very interesting document, allegedly an investigative report by the Office of Affirmative Action and Equal Opportunity, if you will, a document clearly jaundiced, falsified with information and et cetera, by people who really are not trained in investigators, primarily individuals who are of another Pacific community, the gay and lesbian community, who have shown absolute disdain and disrespect to African-Americans, particularly African-American males. This is the same Affirmative Action Office, by the way, for our listeners, if you're still with us, that refused 3 years ago, as they were building the Taj Mahal version of the University of Minnesota Stadium, the TCF Stadium, at Swin City Federal, by the way, that's a savings and loan corporation. The Affirmative Action Office refused to insert, if you will, and require any real affirmative action program. The stadium was built, if you will. Certainly African Americans, better than half of the squad, bring fans into the stadium, helps the university make money, help pay off whatever it is that they have remaining. And consequently, no African Americans were really employed. I repeat again, no African Americans were employed on the stadium, if you will. No contracts were awarded to any African-American enterprises in the industry of construction and et cetera. Now, what's also sad about this, and again, we certainly hope that we're still on the air. If not, we'll deal with it next week, if you will. I imagine there'll be some kind of explanation. But the Affirmative Action Department refuses to examine the significant absence of African-American professionals, and I'm talking about full professors, assistant professors, associate professors, administrators, heads of the schools, and et cetera, if you will. In fact, one of the things that has happened, one of the great silences, if you will, is the African-American Studies Department, you know, which was founded upon Black Power in the 1960s, and African-Americans and others standing and fighting on the commons in front of the administration building, taking over the administration building. Oh, I know there's a lot of you out there who have no idea what we're talking about. But again, you can always go back to your history channel, your history websites, and et cetera. I can well remember the occupation and et cetera, because we were part of young Negroes that were there and were battling high from the university of Syracuse. It was happening all across the country. And so the African-American department, if you will, came out of that particular historical action And I've been so disappointed at the failure of that entity to say anything. And with the exception of Tyrone Carter, if you will, I've really been surprised at the silence of black alumni who live here in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul and who are, you know, keep in touch from around the country. Absolute silence. Now, our civil rights organizations and groups have also been silent. No one has spoken up for these young men. And as we said yesterday afternoon, the county attorney announced that he was reopening a case in which initially his office had declined to prosecute based on the recommendation and the review of the investigation by the Minneapolis Police Department in regards to the real and true events that it took place. Now, what has happened is that we are looking at the old traditional, you know, white woman has, quote-unquote, indicated that she was violated by black animals and savages. In fact, in one of the report, which, by the way, is online, though the video showing the young lady involved in some, you know, very kind of spicy acts, if you will, in which it was quite clear that she certainly was not under duress, not being forced to do anything. In fact, one of the things that, that she did and says in one of the documents that was not made as public as by the president of this university was that after she had invited, after she had went up to the room of one of the African-American football players, Mr. Johnson, that in anticipation of what she was getting ready to enjoy, she was into her menstrual period, you know, she was on her period. We could talk about this on blog radio. And she went into the bathroom so that she could take out her Tampax, if you will, so that, you know, she could enjoy what was getting ready to happen. And then later, after having sex with a 17-year-old African-American, which in Minnesota would be a violation of the law, and that she is over 21. I mean, she had to be because she had been out drinking all night, according to her. She had a very good conversation and talked in terms of his visiting the University of Minnesota. He was a candidate, if you will, who later said he had no intention. He had no intention whatsoever of coming back to the University of Minnesota. He just didn't like the campus. He didn't like the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And he just didn't think it was a place that, that he wanted to come to. She later went on to talk. Oh, by the way, the young lady in question, who will be, is a person that has been identified in lawsuits that have been filed by Attorney Hutton on behalf of the 10 African Americans, and he has also filed lawsuits against President Keller, however I pronounce his name, the athletic director Coy, who came here from the University of Syracuse, and the young lady, because people want to see the video, if you will. There is a 102-second video, if you will, of the activities in the room, if you will, of the young lady, you know, being engaged in sexual activity and et cetera. None of it appears to raise to the threshold, if you will, of sexual assault, and et cetera. Now, the other part that is not being discussed, and I was, as I said before, so disappointed that our leadership and our NAACP and Urban League and civil rights organizations did not get on top of this, is it's the doctrine called due process, which is an integral part of the American judiciary experience, if you will, you know, that every citizen is supposedly allowed due process if charged either criminally, if you will, or quote-unquote non-criminally, if you will. You have a right to due process. You have a right to be represented. You have a right to have the evidence examined. In other words, you are supposedly not subject to be brought before kangaroo courts, such as the Affirmative Action Office of the University of Minnesota, which has never raised a whimper about the serious deficiency of numbers of African-American professionals who are not hired at this institution. In fact, University of Minnesota is at the bottom of the totem pole in the Big Ten. All those big universities, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, now Rutgers, if you will, Maryland, if you will, and then back to the heartland, if you will, Indiana, Purdue, Illinois, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Iowa, if you will, and all of a sudden, no one wants to talk in terms of how the affirmative action policy don't work to bring African Americans into the institutions of higher learning. In fact, we have some schools within the university that have no African American instructors, assistant principals, associate principals, or professors, if you will, and et cetera. And we have always wondered, as a historian, but also as a longtime activist, how this can happen. I mean, how is it that a school which proclaims itself to be one of the most liberal in the history of collegiate America has so many quote-unquote vacancies, empty spots in so many of its main schools of learning and et cetera. In fact, let me give you an example. University of Minnesota takes great pride in indicating that its that its law school is one of the greatest white law schools in the United States of America. And of course, it is. It's graduated some real legends and giants, if you will. The only problem is that falls below the norm and the curve. That's a key word that they use a lot, the curve. As it pertains to African Americans, in graduate and undergraduate school and getting, law degrees and et cetera. In fact, probably the greatest legal mind that we've had here in the state of Minnesota, the legendary All-Pro Hall of Famer, Alan Page, who just retired as a justice, the same requirement, if you will, of law, has just retired, stepped down about 5 months ago as a justice, an associate justice of the Minnesota State Supreme Court, if you will. And no one likes to talk about that here in our beloved Shangri-La, but on the other hand, we thought that even our white colleagues, our white friends, our white supporters in the judiciary arena, if you will, the Minnesota School of Law, would have raised the question about due process. See, due process is supposedly so important in maintaining the democratic institutions of a society, of a nation, if you will, and all of its institutions. And yet the law school, dean of the law school and all others, have been extremely quiet as these young African Americans, 10, are now about to probably be indicted, if you will. And what the word is in those places where whispers take place and people smirk and who recognize that the legacy of liberalism and et cetera in the land of Humphrey and McCarthy and Mondale and et cetera is just that. It's a myth. It's a joke, if you will, that these young African Americans are going to be made an example of. Now, we have a recommendation, by the way, as a longtime activist and a person who is, in fact, identified in a book entitled Under the Tarnished Dome, which really was a book about the experiences of Lou Holtz at University of Notre Dame, but in there are two chapters that talk in terms of his experience here at the University of Minnesota trying to get it back on track. He was 4-6 the first year, 6-5 the second year, and then Lou Holtz decided he couldn't get it done. He got the hell on out of here. But in the book Under the Tarnished Dome, published over a decade ago, we would refer you to pages 189 and pages 253 through 256. In which this commentator was at the front and center, actually starting by filing a complaint with the NCAA against the University of Minnesota for its treatment of its black athletes, both in football and the famous Madison incident, an incident where, again, a white woman maintained that she was violated by three African-American basketball players for the University of Minnesota basketball team in what was 1987. The names are well remembered and etched in stone. Lee, Mitch Lee, Williams, and Smith. Kind of like a law firm. Lee, Williams, and Smith. Three young men whose lives were ruined. Just as the Affirmative Action Office of the University of Minnesota had indicated that it is their intention to ruin the reputations and the images of these 10 young African Americans. That's the reason that we have such great respect for Anton Winfield Sr., who has come here from Texas to confront the university. He has made some statements which have made a lot of people nervous. Mr. Winfield, as we said, former professional football player, defensive back, who played for a period of time with the Minnesota Vikings, you know, a team that's kind of collapsed here. Vikings won't be making it into the playoffs, but that's another subject matter for another time, if you will. Well, we're coming down to basically the last 6 minutes. As we said before, we apologize if we were cut off at 9 o'clock. We cannot understand why that would happen. That would be an issue contrary to the stated mission of the program and the contract. But I'm hoping that because we didn't receive any kind of signal that we were not on the air, we hopefully are still here. Well, we look forward with great interest and a sense of 10 young African Americans. By the way, you can rest assured that it will be difficult for the University of Minnesota, particularly if these young men are not given due process, and particularly given that they will not be allowed to play in the game in the Holiday Bowl in San Diego on the 27th day of December. You can almost rest assured that there will be a significant exodus, if you will, of African Americans off of the football team. And also we can assure you that there will begin to be problems with the basketball team, which right now is enjoying an excellent preseason. They are, is it 11-1? Yes, going into the Big Ten season. Their white coach really needs to have a very outstanding season. The young white coach here is the son, if you will, of the legendary Patino at the University of Louisville. Last year, and this is the young man who was brought in after the university unfairly fired the legendary Tubby Smith, who left, built back up Texas Tech within 2 years to a winning program. They're in the top 25 and is now the head coach at Memphis. Tubby Smith, a great man, a great, great human being, who, as far as they were concerned here, unfortunately, he was black. Though it's interesting that the two most successful coaches in the last 30 years in basketball here at the University of Minnesota have been Clem Haskins, if you will, who came here from Western Kentucky and to revitalize this program, and Tubby Smith, if you will, who also came in after a disastrous line of white coaches that have basically done nothing but stumble around. And yet the white media here, which is one of the most racist in the United States, kept calling for the scalp, if you will, of Tubby Smith. We had an athletic director, by the way, a man, by the way, by the name of Norwood Keith. You were encouraged to take a look at our website, my website, in which 3 years ago I wrote extensively about what kind of crook, if you will, Norwood Teague was. The university had no choice but to let him loose after he had fired Tubby Smith. But we, as a black journalist, were able to uncover and to present certain evidence, as we did in 1985, exposing the corruption of the University of Minnesota's football team, if you will. Again, we encourage you to take a look at pages 189 and pages 253 to 256 of the book and called and entitled Under the Tarnished Dome, if you will, a book on Lou Holtz. I tell you, Lou was something else. Lou was a stone hustler, if you will. Everywhere he went, he ultimately had to get out, if you will, be it Arkansas or William & Mary or the New York Jets or the University of Minnesota and ultimately Notre Dame University, if you will. So as we move closer to closing time, if you will, as we said before, if in fact the last half hour of this program has some way or another been purged, we will come back next week. With a greater clarification, we will chit-chat with, quote-unquote, the network facilitator of this program to find out why there was only 30 minutes. If, in fact, that was a factual message we were hearing in our ear, I'm not sure that you would have heard it, but we will know in just about a minute and a half because there is a specific signal that is sent which would allow and indicate to us if, in fact, the program was still on or if something happened. Like I said, the NSA is at work. They're doing all kinds of things. And we go back to the opening of the program, which we do know that was heard in the first half hour. And maybe that's what got the NSA to make a decision to preempt us and shut us down, if you will. So much for blog radio, if in fact that is what has happened. Again, we hope not. We're down to the last couple of minutes. But we will keep you as our listening audience up to speed on the future of 10 young African-Americans who were investigated by the police. The allegations were looked at by the county attorney and prosecutors. Both entities indicated there was no prima facie, there was not enough evidence in the circuit to even think about charging them. And now suddenly, because of the role of the university itself, which lied to the players, if you will, which falsified documents and et cetera, that these young men are now subject to a second investigation in which there is clearly no prima facie to carry out such a investigation and continue to jeopardize, if you will, undermine their constitutional rights. We invoke the American doctrine of due process because I can assure you that these 10 young African Americans were not provided with anything approaching due process, if you will. Well, it seems to be we've reached the witching hour. And we will check and find out what happened if something happened. But if we still had you with us over the last half hour, we appreciate you joining with us, if you will. And we will be back next week to our friends at the NSA. This is Ron Edwards, and this is the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul.